Good morning. I have been reading about dog training. Well, sort of, kind of. Three quarters of the way through the book, and he says, "This is not a book about how to train your dog." I'm like, "Great, why am I reading it?" But anyway, so he doesn't have it is and it isn't. But anyway, so it's mostly about leadership, which I find interesting. So I'd like to read, to open up, I'd like to read Hebrews 4, 12 through 13. I'll be reading out of the New International Version. "For the Word of God is living and active, sharper than any double-edged sword. It penetrates even to dividing soul and spirit, joints and marrow. It judges the thoughts and attitudes of the heart. Nothing in all creation is hidden from God's sight. Everything is uncovered and laid bare before the eyes of Him to whom we must give account." This is precision and knowledge and leadership. I mean, God has this down pat. He is very, very precise. He can split hairs. I mean, so he knows exactly where the line is, unlike husbands and fathers and leaders and teachers. And if you're in a leadership position, how many times do you find yourself in a position where, all right, did they cross the line or not? You know, God doesn't have any problems with that. He knows exactly where the line is. And how many times when you find yourself in a position of leadership, you don't know. You don't know the whole story. You don't know what's going on. You don't know, you know, what's happening. God has no problem with that. He knows everything. He knows exactly what's going on. He knows all three sides of the story, if there are three. So anyway, this is what I've been thinking about. And with dogs, it's interesting because dogs are easier than humans. Dogs don't have memory of, how did he say that? He says they don't hold grudges. They don't have all that kind of stuff going on in their lives like we have. We have at all. We're loaded with it. But the dogs don't. So I find it very interesting. Because they just want somebody to lead. They want to know who's boss. And if you aren't going to be the boss, then the dog's going to be boss. That's just the way it is. So that's all they want to know. So anyway, enough of the dogs. I was more concerned about myself and the human side of it. I've been having troubles probably lately with my leadership and what the dog, obviously, is one of them. Dog thinks he's boss. so I got to get my act together on that. Second one is taekwondo. I teach taekwondo. And there's nothing like a classroom of 6 to 12-year-olds that will quickly test to see who's in charge, and they will test it. And I haven't been working on my stuff. I've been busy teaching, and I haven't been practicing. And so what happens then is you forget stuff, and then you get embarrassed when you're trying to teach something and you teach them half of this form and then the second half of this form and put them together. And You're right in front of the parents. So anyway, not a good thing. So anyway, I am a golden retriever, as we found out from our... who was that? Gary Smalley, yes. Gary Smalley. And so I am not a lion. And so I find myself in these leadership positions that are better suited to a lion. Lions go for this position. They want this position. They're going to have it, and that's the way it is. Like dogs. I mean, who leads in the dog pack? It's the one who's the strongest, who's the most dominant. And so anyway, we're not dogs. So we have this problem. We have a golden retriever trying to lead the wolf pack, and it doesn't work so well sometimes. And then family is always, leadership is constantly needed in family situation, and it's forever changing. I mean, as soon as you figure out how to handle one situation, the rules all change, and the kids grow up, and the things just shift. It's like you're on sand all the time. So anyway, and so this is the dilemma I find myself in. I want to lead from the position I've been given, not the one I would choose. So I am not exactly the jump out front, let's get it done type person. But I'm in the boat. I'm in the front of the boat, you know. I got the, like, if you've ever been to Eminence, I've talked about this before. You're going down the river in a canoe, and you've only do this once every 3 years. You quickly figure out that you don't really know what you're doing, and it soon becomes a match of, what are you doing back there? What are you doing up there? And so you somebody's got to steer the thing. So, like the dogs, somebody is going to lead. And God has put me in that position. My family, and it's my taekwondo class, not saying God has put me there, but I'm there, and it's my dog, and I'm supposed to be the leader. So, I need to figure this out. I'm going to jump to Exodus. Exodus chapter 3. The men that we find, or I say men, the leaders we find in the Bible are, you know, they're outstanding people. But if you read their stories, they are just like us. You have basically three groups of people, of leaders in the Bible. You have those who don't follow God. Okay, I'll put them first. There's those that just, they don't follow God. They're going to do their thing no matter what. The Judges is full of kings and, or not, not judges, but kings is full of kings who just don't do what they're supposed to do. And then we have the second group. We have maybe Gideon. I didn't really look for examples of this, but you have groups of guys that take off good. And then the end of their life, you know, I'm not so sure they ended that right, you know. And then we have groups of leaders like, we're going to look at Moses. We are going, we have David, we have King Hezekiah. No, that's enough for now. But they start out good. They have the best of intentions. And God helps them out, and they go through this thing, and then they get in this valley, and they they don't do so well. And they stumble and fall around. And then what makes them different from the other two groups is they come back. They come back to God. They come back to Him, and they repurpose their life back to God. And then they end on a happy note, which is good. Okay, so Exodus 3:11. I identified pretty well with Moses here. I'm just going to read the one verse, I think. But Moses said to God, "Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt?" I guess I'll read part of 12. And God said, "I will be with you, and this will be the sign to you that it is I who have sent you." Okay, and then we had to... I mean, this is at the burning bush, and he's throwing the rod down, picking up the snake, and all this stuff. So, I mean, there's power going on here. And Moses is going, "Who am I?" Then let's jump over 4, 8 through 17. Then the Lord said, "If they do not believe you or pay attention to the first miraculous sign, which was sticking his hand in his robe, and then it came out leprous." I mean, that's serious stuff. That's nasty stuff. And then, let's see, where were we? Verse 8. "They may believe the second, but if they do not..." All right, what was the second one? The second one was... Or maybe that was the second one. The snake was the first one. Yeah, that's right. Snake was the first one. Leprosy was the second one. All right. "You may not believe the second. But if they do not believe these two signs or listen to you, take some water from the Nile and pour it on the dry ground. The water you take from the river will become blood on the ground." Moses said to the Lord, "O Lord, I have never been eloquent, neither in the past nor since you have spoken to your servant. I am slow of speech and tongue." Now, always before, this is where I thought God started to come apart on Moses. But I don't believe that anymore. I don't think so. "The Lord said to him, 'Who gave man his mouth? Who makes him deaf or mute? Who gives him sight or makes him blind? Is it not I, the Lord? Now go, I will help you speak and will teach you what to say.'" Okay, God's right there with him. Then verse 13. "But Moses said, 'O Lord, please send someone else to do it.' Then the Lord's anger burned against Moses, and he said, 'What about your brother Aaron, the Levite? I know he can speak well. He is already on his way to meet you, and his heart will be glad when he sees you. You shall speak to him and put words in his mouth.'" So God's angry. Why is he angry? Because he's rejecting... He's basically saying, "God, I don't even think you can do this. As long as I'm in the equation, I don't think you can do this," is what he said. So he's rejecting God's power. And so God's already cooling off. He's already... Reinforcements are on the way. And then he says here... verse 15. "You shall speak to him and put words in his mouth." He's already back to the original plan. He's already back to it. "You shall speak to him and put words in his mouth. I will help both of you speak and will teach you what to do. He will speak to the people for you, and it will be as if he were your mouth and as if you were God to him. But take this staff in your hand so that you can perform the miraculous signs with it." So the lesson learned from that is, do not say, "Oh Lord, please send someone else to do it." Because, as if we go to Gideon, I'm not going to go there, but in Judges 6 and 24, I forgot to write down the capping verse or whatever. But this, or the, oh, start in verse 1. 6:1-24. This is where the people of Israel are terribly oppressed by the Midianites. They're just being constantly overrun by these. They can't even plant anything they plant, anything they try to grow, Midianites, Amalekites, they just come and they're just become the grocery store for these people. So Gideon's hiding. He's got some stuff to grow to maturity, and so he's trying to get it harvested, and he's hiding doing that. And this angel comes and says, oh, mighty warrior, I think he calls Gideon, as he's hiding. I thought that was ironic. Then he goes on, and Gideon just goes, I used to get so irritated with the story of Gideon. Man, this guy has no spine whatsoever, and he's just constantly questioning God. What I've found in analyzing myself is that if I get irritated, really irritated with somebody, it's generally because they remind me of me. So, point taken. Okay. Gideon is going on, and this angel is there, and he's asking for, all right, don't go nowhere. I want to bring my sacrifice to you, and as a sign that I'm really seeing what I'm seeing, and you're really saying what you're saying. And so he takes and brings this food, which wasn't a short time. He prepared the lamb or calf, I can't remember which it was, but prepared this, and that's not a short, I mean, he didn't go pull it out of the freezer. So he prepared it, and this angel hung around, and then angel touches his staff to it, and fire comes out of the rock and consumes it. Well, then Gideon goes, it's true, it is an angel. And he falls down, and the angel's like, no, you're not going to die, and all this stuff. So it's just funny how he's reacting to all this. Like, he's asking for a sign and then can't believe it when he gets a sign. So then we know the next part of the story is he's actually got this, God tells him to gather this army. And he says, all right, so I'm going to put this fleece out, and I want it to be dry and everything else to be wet around it. And so God does that for him. And he wrings all this water out of it, gets a whole bowl full of water. And then Gideon goes, do not be angry, but I want the fleece dry and there. Well, the opposite of whatever I said the first time. And so it is. It comes true. And then he gets this huge army, and then they whittle it down to almost nothing, 300 men. And I would be nervous at this point, too, because the others were like grasshoppers in the valley. And so God didn't even wait for Gideon this time. He says, all right, I want you to go down to the tent, down to the Midianites, and listen. And so they give him this, they're discussing this dream they had, and it's all in Gideon's favor. And so he goes back, and God never says in here that he's angry at Gideon. Now, in the New Testament, we do get a glimpse that maybe Jesus was getting tired of all these people constantly asking for a sign. But Gideon, when he got the sign, he would act on it. Now, Pharisees and stuff like that weren't necessarily acting on it. They were just constantly asking for more proof. So anyway, so Gideon was a reluctant leader, I would say. And so was Moses, for that matter. But God was not angry with Gideon, because Gideon didn't say, please send somebody else. Gideon decided to get up and go do it anyway, with God's help. All right, let's go back to Exodus, chapter 4, 18 through 20, I have written down. Then Moses went back to Jethro, his father-in-law, and said to him, let me go back to my own people in Egypt to see if any of them are still alive. Jethro said, go, and I wish you well. Now the Lord had said to Moses in Midian, go back to Egypt, for all the men who wanted to kill you are dead. So Moses took his wife and sons, put them on a donkey, and started back to Egypt. and he took the staff of God in his hand. The Lord said to Moses, "When you return to Egypt, see that you perform before Pharaoh all the wonders I have given you the power to do. But I will harden his heart so that he will not let the people go. Then say to Pharaoh, 'This is what the Lord says. Israel is my firstborn son, and I told you, let my son go so that he may worship me. But you refuse to let him go, so I will kill your firstborn son.'" Now, Moses is in very good grace. What is wrong with my tongue? He's on the good side of God, and he's going right along well. And then we read this next verse. "At a lodging place along the way, the Lord met Moses and was about to kill him. But Zipporah took a flint knife, cut off her son's foreskin, and touched Moses' feet with it. 'Surely you are a bridegroom of blood to me,' she said. So the Lord let him alone. At that time, she said, 'the bridegroom of blood,'" referring to the circumcision. So what happened here? Apparently, the Jewish babies were supposed to be circumcised, I think it was 8 days. Didn't look that up, but after they're born. So apparently, either they just had a son, or they had neglected to do this, and God is following up on his discipline or his correction. And so what happened here? See, Moses didn't do his job. He didn't circumcise his son. So what happened? Somebody else did it. Somebody else led. Zipporah took a rock, circumcised him, and then threw the refuse at Moses. So I find that very interesting. But that's what happens when the leader doesn't lead. Someone else is going to do it. All right, let's see if I needed to... Okay, then it goes on, just like everything's fine. "The Lord said to Aaron, 'Go into the desert to meet Moses.' So he met Moses at the mountain of God and kissed him. Then Moses told Aaron everything that the Lord had sent him to say, and also about all the miraculous signs he had commanded him to perform. Moses and Aaron brought together all the elders of the Israelites, and Aaron told them everything the Lord had said to Moses. He also performed the signs before the people, and they believed. And when they heard that the Lord was concerned about them and had seen their misery, they bowed down and worshipped." So things are going very well. They're moving along nicely here. Okay. So, we know we concentrate on the next part of the story very highly in all our VBSs and children's classes and all this stuff, so I'm not going to go there very much at all. So we're going to jump clear through. They're right on the edge of the Promised Land. And we're in Numbers now, chapter 12. And tell me if this doesn't sound like you're getting ready to go to the grocery store and you're leaving your kids at home. Numbers. Oh, wait, maybe I'm in the wrong spot here. Numbers 12. Yeah, I am. All right, this is the wrong story. Sorry. Jumped ahead there. This is God and his justice and correction. Numbers 12, 1 through 16. "Miriam and Aaron began to talk against Moses because of his Cushite wife, for he had married a Cushite. 'Has the Lord spoken only through Moses?' they asked. Now, isn't that totally human? I mean, if it was a dog pack, they don't care if it's a poodle or a Dalmatian or Rottweiler or a Chihuahua. Okay, the guy in the book he has that I was reading, he says he has like 40 different dogs that he works with every day, and these dogs are the problem dogs. Okay, these aren't the ones that you get from the pound. These are the ones the pound is gonna put down, and he works with them, and he says as long as he's the leader and in charge of things, they all stay in line. So this is a human problem here. All right. All right. Has the Lord spoken only through Moses, they asked? Hasn't he also spoken through us? And the Lord heard this. Probably not a good thing. Now, Moses was a very humble man, more humble than anyone else on the face of the earth. At once, the Lord said to Moses, Aaron, and Miriam, come out of to the tent of meeting, all three of you. So the three of them came out. Then the Lord came down in a pillar of cloud. He stood at the entrance to the tent and summoned Aaron and Miriam. When both of them stepped forward, he said, listen to my words. When a prophet of the Lord is among you, I reveal myself to him in visions. I speak to him in dreams. But this is not true of my servant Moses. He is faithful in all my house. With him I speak face to face, clearly and not in riddles. He sees the form of the Lord. Why then were you not afraid to speak against my servant Moses? The anger of the Lord burned against him, and he left them. When the cloud lifted from above the tent, there stood Miriam, leprous like snow. Aaron turned toward her and saw that she had leprosy. And he said to Moses, please, my Lord, do not hold against us the sin we so foolishly committed. Do not let her be like a stillborn infant coming from its mother's womb with its flesh half eaten away. So Moses cried out to the Lord, O God, please heal her. The Lord replied to Moses, if her father had spit in her face, would she not have been in disgrace for 7 days? Confine her outside the camp for 7 days. After that, she can be brought back. So Miriam was confined outside the camp for 7 days, and the people did not move on till she was brought back. See, here, God is perfect, of course, in his leadership. He saw the problem. He knew right where the line was. He took action on it, and it was corrected. And for the most part, nothing really happened after 7 days, I suppose. It was all back to normal. And that's an example for me to hold up and to look for, to try and be similar to that, to see the problem and head it off and get it taken care of and to be just in it. Okay, Deuteronomy. Now this is where we're going. This is the end of Moses' life. I mean, when you think of Deuteronomy 31, 24 through 29. You think of Moses, you think of, 10 commandments. I mean, he did wonderful things and followed God. I mean, we just read his endorsement by God. I mean, not very many people got endorsed by God in that way. So this is one of our very best, one of human very best. Deuteronomy 31, starting verse 24. After Moses finished writing in a book the words of this law from the beginning to end, he gave this command to the Levites who carried the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. Take this book of the law and place it beside the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God. There it will remain as a witness against you. For I know how rebellious and stiff-necked you are. If you have been rebellious against the Lord while I am still alive and with you, how much more will you rebel after I die? Assemble before me all the elders of your tribes and all your officials, so that I can speak these words in their hearing and call heaven and earth to testify against them. For I know that after my death, you are sure to become utterly corrupt and to turn from the way I have commanded you. In days to come, disaster will fall upon you because you will do evil in the sight of the Lord and provoke him to anger by what your hands have made. That's not very uplifting. Moses was laying it down for them, and that's exactly what they did. I mean, Gideon, prime example. They spent 7 years because they messed up, and God let the Midianites run them over, and for 7 years. And so, if you got read the next chapter as well, it's called a song of Moses, but it's like a psalm, which is probably a song. So, but it's interesting, and then we're going to jump to the end of that chapter to verse 44. I'll start in verse 44. Moses came with Joshua, son of Nun, and spoke all the words of this song in the hearing of the people. When Moses finished reciting all these words to all Israel, he said to them, "Take to heart all the words I have solemnly declared to you this day, so that you may command your children to obey carefully all the words of this law. They are not just idle words for you. They are your life. By them you will live long in the land you are crossing the Jordan to possess." So here he's saying, in the previous chapter, he said, "I know what's going to happen." And said, "And here's the escape route. Here's the way around it. Take these words, live by them, and teach them to your kids." I mean, how many... I would love to know if there's a verse that says how Moses' kids turned out. I would love to know that. Because how many times... King David had a rotten bunch of kids. Eli's kids were just dead wrong. And Samuel's kids were messed up. And you just go on down the line and you got some kids that just didn't learn. And I think the reason for that is because you go back and you look at these men. These men were in high-profile positions. They were leading countries, prophets, priests. I mean, they were leading thousands, millions of people maybe, and they were spending all their time and effort on the people, and their own kids were slipping through the cracks. And so the point of this whole thing is these men were godly men. I can't think of who I named now. But they were godly men. They were doing what God wanted. But they were men. We are miserable at the best, you know. Our rags are our best works are like rags to God. I just thought of that. So anyway. So we need to be very careful in how we lead. That's where I'm going with this, is we have to take this leadership position very seriously, because even the best men, I mean the people that had God's endorsement, they didn't get it right. They didn't get it 100% right. They messed up. They needed God's help. I mean, just think what they would have done if they wouldn't have had God's guidance. I mean, they would have really screwed up, because we got stories all over the place of the people who didn't have God's guidance, and they did really screw it up. So I guess what I'm saying is, go to God, ask for God's help. Know that there's no way we can do this by ourselves. We're going to screw it up even with God's help. Basically, is the way it's going to work. And our best hope is to keep coming back to God. Just keep coming back. Just be that Energizer bunny that you can't get to quit. Just keep coming back. Just keep coming back. I'm going to go to Hebrews 4 again. Read a couple more verses. Because there was one man who did it perfectly. Derek did a great job. We can be so very thankful that he was bidding on us. Very, very, very thankful for that. So, Hebrews 4. I'm going to reread starting 12 again. This is perfect leadership. For the Word of God is living and active, sharper than any double-edged sword. It penetrates even to dividing soul and spirit, joints and marrow. It judges the thoughts and the attitudes of the heart. Nothing in all creation is hidden from God's sight. Everything is uncovered and laid bare before the eyes of Him, to whom we must give an account. Therefore, since we have a great high priest who has gone through the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold firmly to the faith we profess. For we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but we have one who has been tempted in every way, just as we are, yet was without sin. Let us then approach the throne of grace with confidence, so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help us in our time of need. Right there is the way I picture the picture that popped into my head was as Jesus was ascending, or maybe that's too late, as he was going through this life and going through all the temptations and all this thing, he had this red thread in his hand, or some other brightly colored thread. And as he went through his life and through all these troubles and these issues in this life and did it perfectly, and then he went, died on the cross, that opened up the eye of the needle so we could get into heaven. And then he took that thread and he went through that eye of the needle into heaven. And he's still hanging on the other end. And if we hang on to our end of that thread, which is the Word of God, if we hold on to that thread and we just keep holding on to it, I mean, the wind may blow us off to the side and we're going to fall down, and maybe we'll even drop it, but we can find it again and get back a hold of it again. We can follow that thread right through that eye of that needle, and we can get into heaven. And it's all because of Christ and His blood and His example. Because otherwise, who would hit that little hole? We wouldn't be able to hit it. So, my thoughts, if you're a leader, and I would say almost every single one of us are in some form of leadership, take that very seriously, and to don't say, Lord, send somebody else, because that doesn't go over well. But ask for help. God loves, that's what He loves. He took Gideon and picked him up and gave him everything he asked for and molded him, got him going in the way he needed to go. And Gideon was very, very successful, accomplished many great things, as so did Moses, David, King Hezekiah, and Samuel, Eli. And so take that leadership very seriously and do the best you can with it. And that's my thoughts for this morning. So if there's anybody here who needs to pick up that thread so that they can get through the eye of the needle and be with God in heaven, we can help you do that if you'd come forward as we stand and sing the closing song.